Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Today is the 9th of the 5th month, 2025. It is a Friday evening and the time is 21:02. My name is the Matriarch and we will be continuing our conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about what are the challenges of black men. What are you guys facing? What are you guys going through? What are your problems? To be honest, I want to hear what your problems are. I want to hear if we can table these problems because I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted from seeing my brothers, fathers, cousins and uncles and godfathers. I'm tired of seeing you guys in the same loop. I'm tired of seeing you guys recycle generational trauma. I'm tired of seeing you guys recycle generational turmoil, generational poverty, generational violence, generational anything. I am tired of watching you guys break in front of me and I have no idea how to stop it. And also I have no idea how to maybe just maybe teach my son how to manage the pressures that come with being a black man in contemporary Namibia. Ladies and gentlemen, I want us to have this open conversation on Pulling Heartstrings about your struggles as a man. I want to hear the full-on truth about what happens to you as a man so that maybe, just maybe, there is a level of understanding that can come from this conversation. There is compassion that can come from this conversation. There is that diminishing element of ideation of a black man. And I would also like to, I would like to know, ladies and gentlemen. So we're diving into our conversation and we're starting with TED Talks from black men around the world, and we are seeing their struggles. Now, if you're a black man, and I know that it's not only black men that are suffering, it's not only black men that are going through this, it's not only, yes, absolutely, you are correct. And it doesn't help that you're sitting on the other side of the phone, just talking to yourself in the wind, while there is clearly a platform where you are welcome to. Now, I know I'm not a man, and I know I'm most probably the last person that you would like to talk about, to talk to about your masculinity. I understand. I understand that there are things that I'll never understand because I've never walked a mile in your shoes. I understand. But right now, I'm your only bet. And right now, I am willing to listen. I'm willing to hear. I'm willing to be a part of it.
It was 2004, and two very significant events had taken place. First, Kanye West had just released his debut album, The College Dropout. Second, I was graduating from the eighth grade and headed into high school. I was so influenced by Kanye at the time that I even wore a pink polo shirt to my graduation. It's a little cringe when I look back on it now, but I thought I was killing the game then. After the graduation ceremony, my dad pulled me to the side and he said he had to share something with me. Now, in my young eighth grade mind, I'm thinking, okay, he got me a surprise. Maybe it's some new sneakers, or maybe it's the new NBA Live that features Vince Carter on the cover. Now, what he had for me, it was a surprise, but it wasn't the surprise I was expecting. He pulled me to the side and he said this. He said, "Here's what's going to happen over the next few years while you matriculate through high school. Some of your friends are going to drop out. Some of the girls are going to get pregnant. Some of your friends are going to prison. And some of your friends are going to die." And I remember thinking, like, man, you just killed my celebration. Like, that was super extreme. But what he was attempting to do was prepare me for what would inevitably happen. And looking back, I don't fault him for this. Like, I understand. Because here's the reality. He too was never exposed to safe spaces, and he never learned the language of emotional fluency. And I'm a firm believer that you cannot teach what you do not know. So, quick question. How many of you are familiar with this image right here? A few. So, what this is actually a screenshot from a viral video that was a few years ago. The boy in the blue shirt was then 6-year-old Noah. The boy in the white shirt is his younger brother, 4-year-old Corey. So let me explain what's happening right here. Corey is on the verge of an emotional explosion, literally. Reason being, his Nintendo Switch had just ran out of batteries. Major crisis, right? Noah realized what Corey was going through, and he stepped into that space as his older brother to create a space for Corey to feel his emotions. See, what Noah understood was that if he could create a space where Corey would feel those emotions, he could then walk him through an exercise to help him change his state. And he did just that. So within a matter of minutes, Corey was back smiling and having a good time. And what could have been a moment for an emotional explosion actually turned into a practical lesson on safe space creation as well as emotional fluency. And guess where Noah learned this from? His mother, Ashley West, who regularly practiced mindfulness and meditation practices with her boys. So before we move forward, I don't want to assume that you already know this. So let's briefly define what a safe space is as well as emotional fluency. A safe space is a place or an environment where a person or collective of people can feel confident that they won't be exposed to emotional or physical harm. Emotional fluency is being able to sense, translate, and express those emotions in a healthy and productive manner. It was now 2008. I managed to make it through those last 4 years of high school after experiencing everything that my dad shared with me prior. My focus was basketball as well as clubs, and they served as scapegoats from any emotional traumas or pitfalls that I would fall into. Shortly after that, with graduation, again, after experiencing everything that my dad said, I still became a first-generation high school graduate. I was prom king. I was an all-star athlete. And I also earned a full-ride athletic scholarship to play basketball in Memphis, Tennessee. If only accomplishments could heal open wounds. The summer after my graduation, I actually stayed with my pop-up for the summer because he planned to drive me from New Jersey all the way down to Memphis, Tennessee, in his infamous Astro van. As an athlete and a freshman, incoming freshman, I wanted to make sure that I made the starting lineup. So I would train intensely. I'm talking 2-a-days, sometimes even 3-a-days, because I really wanted to break that starting lineup. And one day after I was training, I came home again to my pop-up's house, and I noticed that he was sitting on the couch holding his stomach in what looked like agonizing pain. So I walked in, I asked my brother, I said, how long has he been sitting like this? He said, a few hours. I'm like, man, that's strange. Because I'm used to my pop-up always doing something. Like when the casino actually made him retire, he would always be home fixing something, cutting the grass, making something. Sometimes he would even break stuff so he can fix it again. He was that kind of handy guy. I viewed him as a Superman-like figure. So to see him in this position in this type of pain, I panicked. First thing I did was shot him to the emergency room. I started to call family, let them know where we were. And as my family started to come into the emergency room, the doctor came in from the back and he said, is this the Evans family? Yeah, this is us. He said, I have some challenging news to share with you. Robert has intestinal gangrene. Now, I'm 18 years old. I have no idea what that means. So in my brain, I'm thinking, okay, you're going to give him some antibiotics. Okay, he'll be home on what day? I wasn't thinking the worst. He continued to talk and he said, the gangrene is progressive and there's nothing we can do to stop it or slow it down. You may want to say your goodbyes. And in a moment, I watched Superman literally disappear in the kryptonite bed right before my eyes with my brother and my father. And this would be my emotional breaking point because we all have one. Especially our black boys. And for me, Shortly after his passing, I would go into a deep depression and I would start suffering from severe anxiety. Now, I actually still went down to school in Memphis, Tennessee, but I dropped out after the first semester. I would end up going to four other colleges after that while battling with suicidal ideations and the unwarranted pressures that black men face in America that causes us to become martyrs to our masculinity. Now, while my pop-up's passing was ultimately that tipping point, that breaking point for me, it wasn't what pushed me up the proverbial ladder of emotional destruction. I was a ticking time bomb, like most of our black boys are today. And if it wasn't his passing that pushed me over the edge, it would have been the next traumatic event. Literally, it would have been the next traumatic event. It's interesting because when you shake a soda can, you can't really tell if it has been shaken until you open the top and it explodes everywhere. In the same way, you can never really tell if the black boy has been shaken, emotionally abused, or traumatized until some type of event happens and then his top is open and he too explodes everywhere. See, without the language of emotional fluency and safe spaces to cultivate that in, black boys and men are merely just big toddlers. See, toddlers lack the comprehension to express how they feel and what they need. They literally just cry or scream. Some of them might even say mama or dada repeatedly. And it's up to us as the parents to understand that need and address that need. But here's the thing. For black boys and men, those cries are rarely ever tears. Instead, they come off as embracive behaviors, acts of violence, drug abuse, and in worst cases, suicide. In the American Journal of Orthopsychiatry, an article titled Boys Don't Cry, Addressing the Unmet Needs of African American Boys, it states that African American communities are lacking safe spaces for black boys to express their emotions. And they're also lacking mentor groups as well. Just imagine, right? You're a young black boy. You're being exposed to violence. You're being exposed to racism as well as white supremacy. And then you're also seeing black males be murdered on a loop that plays on every social media platform that you log on to. See, safe spaces and the language of emotional fluency is a necessity for us to survive. So, Nate, how did you become emotionally fluent? Well, I'm glad you asked, because I know you want to know, right? While in the posture of running from my own emotional trauma, I found myself in my bedroom in the dark, contemplating and wondering if this would be the day that I would end it all. These were my thoughts, right? I was three colleges down. I just had lost a close friend to suicide and another one in prison. I was flat broke, and me and my family were on the verge of being evicted from our home. Now, looking back, I realized that I didn't necessarily want to die. I just wanted to kill the pain. And my best friend, he noticed that something was off with me. He noticed it. He sensed it, right? That's what best friends are for. And saying I'm good wasn't good enough for him to leave me alone. So in the act of love and compassion, he said, look, you need to get out of the house. I'm going to take you to the gym with me. He took me to the gym. And when we got to the gym, he introduced me to two other black men, and they invited me into their brotherhood. So we started training and working out 5 to 6 days a week. But before we would work out, we would sit in that locker room for about 30 to 45 minutes and just talk and fellowship. And what I was exposed to in that locker room, it changed my life forever. I was exposed to men, not even just men. I was exposed to black men being vulnerable and transparent, sharing what they were going through and how they were getting through it. And I don't know if they intentionally did this at all, but those men, they created a safe space for me to feel seen and heard without the fear of judgment. Tony Robbins actually has a quote on that. And he says that the quickest way to learn a new language is to immerse yourself in the environment where that language is primary. So now, as an entrepreneur, as a mentor, part of my work is going into schools and different underserved communities and teaching students and staff members the importance of safe space creation as well as emotional fluency. Because what I believe is this, for black boys, if we can get them early and help them to change their internal world, their external world will be shaped by them instead of their external world shaping them. In 2020, I published a book titled I Love You, Letters of Love from Black Men to Black Boys, with love being the blueprint to create a safe space for someone. So this way you can actually teach them the language of emotional fluency and allow them to feel and embrace their emotions, right? And now when I say love, I'm not talking about the watered down version of love that y'all know from your soap operas and sitcoms and things like that with the conditions attached to it. It's none of that. I'm talking about an unconditional love, agape, if you will, right? That consists of four action steps. We're going to break these down real quick. Four action steps. Listen, open heart, validate, encourage. Listen with the intention to understand and not respond. Open your heart up to embrace and feel the emotions of our boys. Validate that their feelings are in fact real and respect them as valid. And encourage them with how you show up every single day with energy and how you interact with them. You have the power and the ability to discourage them or encourage them. Now, I noticed for me, by applying these four steps over a sustained period of time, I realized that I was able to create a safe space for black boys in a matter of minutes. A matter of minutes. And again, you have the power to do that as well. In the book, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, Dr. Joy DeGruy, she paints the picture of trauma being passed down from generation to generation. Now, if that is true, if trauma can be passed down from generation to generation, then imagine this. That means that healing and love can also be passed down from generation to generation. But it starts now with us. Everyone here, everyone viewing, it starts with us to provide our boys with the tools that they need, not to just survive. Like, we're past survival, but we're talking about thriving now. So I want to ask you a quick question before I go. Really quick question. And I want you to sit with this question. I want you to ask yourself, have I turned off my empathy button? Is the language of emotional fluency something that's only for me, my family, and my culture? Now, if you answer yes to any of these questions non-verbally, I will not ask you to raise your hand or say anything. But what I will ask you to do is turn your empathy button back on and lend a helping hand in this emotional war zone that black boys are unarmed to fight in. To every black man and black boy under the sound of my voice that will see this for years to come, if you've ever felt unseen, unheard, unloved, misunderstood, disrespected, left out, just know, I see you, I hear you, I love you, and I'm fighting for you. Thank you.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is EagleFM Namibia.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the EagleFM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the EagleFM app to tune into live EagleFM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. EagleFM, Namibia's number one talk radio station. Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Henday at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. All right, we'll start on that call. The number in studio is 083-288-401. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the struggles of being a black man. We're talking about your struggles. Now, part of the struggles that we have listed down from the conversation of yesterday, we have spoken about discrimination amongst the two genders, where there is this silent preference, right? There's this silent preference that plays a very big role, but yet we are yet to address it because it is an elephant in the room that we are not willing to look at. We're not willing to see. We are not willing to recognize its existence because its existence comes with stigmatization. So when a man says something like, yeah, all the girls are getting the jobs, right? The first response that will hit him is, yeah, you are just jealous. But is it not true? Is it not true that the girls are getting the jobs, or is it true that the girls are getting the jobs, or what is it? Because with the movement of, I would hate to call it a feminist movement. I would like to say, it is a movement that is pushing the agenda of the girl child, that is pushing the empowerment of the girl child. It's pushing the girl child to greater heights, which is beautiful. It is wonderful. But the problem is that it is not giving an opportunity to the boy child for the boy child to thrive. It's not giving the opportunity to the boy child so that the boy child can be an equal with the girl child that is now headed to power. So at the end of the day, when we are looking at pushing the girl child only, and we're not pushing the boy child, it leaves a dent within the structure of the country. The structure of the country is that we're supposed to multiply, we're supposed to get married, we're supposed to have families, because family is what we are pushing for. We are pushing for family, family, family. But now it is a bit complicated. Good evening.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Yes, good evening, Matthew.
Good evening, Tate Buana. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Tate Buana?
Yes, ma.
How many male psychologists do you know? How many black male psychologists do you know?
I don't know the clinical ones. But I know the ones that the lecturer or the psychologist now, so to say.
The teachers?
The teacher.
Okay, so you don't know any doctors?
I don't know the clinical ones. I know the clinical ones, but perhaps I haven't visited those specialist ones.
Okay. Let's talk social workers then.
Yeah, no, the social worker, we interact so much, too many.
How many black men?
Black men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I said, I haven't really met the black men kind of social worker.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe discussing, except where we speak in general terms.
Okay.
But face to face, one to one, maybe explaining some kind of issues. I'm not able to remember any of one. Yeah?
Not even one,
yeah? I don't think so.
But you know a few social workers that are women?
Yeah, I know social worker. Because every time we present some of those things,
mm-hmm.
we found the social worker, female social worker there.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't find men.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Mm-hmm. So like you were saying, perhaps yesterday when your conclusion, encouraging parents and people to go for social work.
Mm-hmm. But why do you think that you don't find any social workers, psychologists or psychiatrists, or you have not seen any? How come you, why do you think they don't go into that field?
I don't know, talking like Dr. Sean, whatever.
Sean Whittaker.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
one.
I think it's one.
One. Sean Whittaker, one.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. But he's not also a black man. He's a colored man.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah, that's the kind of a thing. So I think there is so much also ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the society has put us into a box.
Okay.
And therefore, some of our issues
mm-hmm.
or problems that really require those people like black,
mm-hmm.
no black.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, yesterday is like I heard that many a times blacks are confined to this clinical treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And not this, and the way you found people who are not even black.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether maybe the mental health is only killing the black men
mm-hmm.
and blacks in general,
mm-hmm.
and the administration of the healing,
mm-hmm.
the application of the healing and all these other things majorly come from the white
mm-hmm.
colleagues. So I don't know whether our mental health issues
mm-hmm.
are different from the other race.
Mm.
So hence the need for us to seriously come out. Even those who can really help us, they should come out. Some of them are here. Their best friends are there. They many are there.
Mm.
But you want to hear those who are maybe trained clinically, psychologist trained, whatever, I don't know how to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives us also a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because to access these people, mm-hmm. it's also a problem.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe, you see, these things, at one point in the meeting,
mm-hmm.
and I was also in that meeting,
mm-hmm.
and today, there was a conversation between John Walenga
mm-hmm.
and Vicky,
mm-hmm.
and I've never heard that kind of a conversation before.
Mm-hmm.
So now that tells us that yes, there are those who are very crazy in the positives.
Mm-hmm.
So generally, when people look at and they observe this craziness,
mm-hmm.
they say it's mental problem.
Mm.
Mental health problem.
Mm.
And it was in that sense that one of the person was, hey, I don't talk to mad people
mm.
in the meeting.
Mm.
Well, the person knows that he himself is a mad person.
Mm.
And he could not identify those himself. So the perceptions and the misconception that put on these things is such in a way that they create also perhaps fear for those who can acknowledge
mm.
their problems. And they remember yesterday, best friend mentioned about that thing, that fear.
Yeah.
The unknown. So it is really a big problem. Today, I was listening in the morning, you know, the TV. They are coming up with this women financial something,
yeah.
insurance summit.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Maybe men we are also not perhaps doing enough
mm.
to initiate and innovate some of those ideas.
Yeah.
And start creating platforms
mm.
Where people can really come together, men can really come together, identify their problems,
mm-hmm.
and they also suggest problem solutions
mm.
so to our situation that we are experiencing. And so we are, like you said, you also mentioned some of these social factors, economic and many other factors, but we need them now to digest those once again. Like mm-hmm. yesterday, asking, what are those social factors? What are those? What are those?
Mm-hmm.
It is a complex discussion, actually, topic.
Mm.
And it's, I think, a bit recent
mm-hmm.
in terms of discussion.
Mm.
There hasn't been so much discussed so much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's like a taboo.
Mm.
At one point, né,
yes.
I observe a child
mm-hmm.
who just got traumatized and become very, very sick.
Mm-hmm.
And all these doctors, they couldn't even diagnose what the problem is.
Yeah.
And then he saw, because the child, I think she was just exposed to something that really disturbed her mind.
Mm.
And as a result, she became sick.
Mm-hmm.
So they tried.
Like physically sick.
Physically and mentally sick.
Okay.
And it's like the head is just so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So then I say, sometimes you act.
Mm.
Your act can also put these young ones into this kind of situation.
Yes.
Because to them,
mm-hmm.
you say, why do I have to experience? And I say, so you need also to listen. I think there was a topic, I don't know, maybe it was you or one of your colleagues
mm.
who was talking on the radio, and then I called her, I said, please listen also to this kind of program.
Yeah.
And they told me that. You know what the person said?
What did they say?
No, I'm not mad!
Mm-hmm.
Just to hear that mentally and all these things. I'm not mad!
So you don't need to learn about it either.
Neither. So it's really a problem. Black people are facing a lot of things, like you are saying.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they are not appreciated. They are not loved. They don't feel loved. They don't feel all these kind of things. And as a result, they look at themselves as perpetrator
mm-hmm.
of violence
mm-hmm.
and all these things. And as they, if we regard them in that manner,
mm.
and I think it's just, it further make their problems worse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very complex matter, Mane, and it's very difficult for us to understand sometimes, but we are really experiencing this kind of problem.
What are young boys told to study? What are young boys told to study? If they yeah, make it to high school, or they make it to university, what are they encouraged to study? Do you know?
Not so much, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so maybe I think they don't go to some of those soft kind of courses like social work.
Why do we call it soft?
Nursing. Maybe because of the nature, the way they deal with this delicate issues of mental and all these other things.
Mm.
And people think that these are just women things,
mm-hmm.
nursing and all these other things.
Mm.
So because they involve that thing of more, the element of this is more of caring,
mm-hmm.
more of loving, perhaps. I don't know.
And men are incapable of that?
I don't know, many are also capable of doing that. So
mm-hmm.
that's why they don't really subject children to, you know, to some things like beating, shouting, and all these other things.
Mm.
That means they are also caring.
Mm.
So, but the way, even when people now say, talk about this custody and all these other things, you find out that even the system will say, no, the child must stay with the mother.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then when you ask, why not the father?
Yeah.
And, you know, people think, does he know even how to cook? Or can he really take care of the children?
Mm-hmm.
All these things, they are labeled against the men.
Yeah.
And they think that they are not well able. And as men now hear that, they also tell you that, no, I know not I am not a group,
Mm-hmm.
Then you now ask yourself, why can't they stay with you? Can't you not cook?
Mm-hmm.
Can't you not wash?
Mm-hmm.
Can't you do these other things that
a woman can do?
that the woman can do.
A woman is assumed to know how to do.
Those kind of things. So maybe we still need to empower our boys, our children, ourselves, as to how to handle those, to know how to handle them appropriately, so that at least they can feel loved, their morals, and just to discover some kind of, you know, ways of coping with those problems that they are facing. So otherwise, really, they feel, like you said yesterday, they feel their men are challenged, their manhood are challenged.
Yeah.
And they feel that, yes, you know, all this kind of thing. And they start resisting the change.
Yeah.
Just to change. Things that can really transform them. But, oh, it's a really thing. For you, you understand it better.
Yeah.
Because you are in that also profession. So, I don't know. It's a complex thing, mommy, and we really need just to re-educate ourselves and our children, our boys.
So if your son goes to school to Tebwana and then he comes back and he was beaten by another boy, what would you tell him?
Go and fight back.
Okay.
And you will be beat again here. That's why they used to beat us.
Okay. So
maybe this time around it's no longer happening, but it used to happen.
Okay, so if your son comes home and he's beaten, but he's beaten by a girl, what will you tell him?
Beaten by a girl?
Hmm.
Oh, again, you know, there's another side where people will now say,
yeah.
Oh, why are you beaten? Imagine you're a cow, beaten by a girl.
Okay.
But then again, at the same time, this kind of contradiction. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we are told that boys should not beat girls.
Yeah.
So now the person is now in the box.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are told, don't beat girls.
Mm-hmm.
When he's beaten by a girl, so she starts again, and then people say, ah, you are a very coward man. How can you be beaten by a woman?
So what would you tell your son?
No, I'll tell my son that, please, don't beat girls.
Okay, so she must just beat him every day.
I think they might find a way.
What way?
Now, if you pick up that thing, you tell the person that, listen, don't continue doing that because the person may become violent.
Okay, then why can't we tell our sons that when they are fighting with other boys?
It is just an ignorance part on our side. I presume. So
are we encouraging girls to be abusive because nothing will happen to them? Because many a times, these men that are being abused by women, they don't speak up about it, but they do end up killing their partners. They do end up beating their partners. So is it maybe, can we look at the fact that women are abusive and how do we go about it? If we can't even tell our son, what to do in kindergarten when he's being beaten by a girl, how are we going to, is our son not going to grow up to be the same guy that is going to kill his wife?
Yeah, you are correct.
Then what should we do?
So let's just be, maybe it's just through education.
What must we teach?
We teach them the value of love.
Okay.
That yes, it is not good. It's not good to retaliate.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you retaliate. You know, I don't know, but my mother used to say, you must run away.
Okay.
But not when they hear that you are
fighting with a boy.
But it's actually when you are fighting with a boy, because they know already that there's no way you can be fighting with a girl.
Mm-hmm.
But they will then tell you that, but why can't you, you're Ningevaya.
But then also, the word Evaya is already strong. So how do you want to become Evaya? A coward?
Imagine now.
Like, who wants to be a coward? Because you are already saying that I would become a coward if I ran away. But you are encouraging me to be a coward. So how? You already taught me that being a coward is a bad thing. So now what?
Those are contradictions in society that we need to iron out.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of those contradictions. And once they are there now, they create more problems.
Mm-hmm.
Like you are saying now that you say, Evaya, and at the same time again, you know, you are telling the person that you need Evaya.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you say now Evaya again, the other people will be laughing at you. Ah, you are useless. You are a coward. You are what?
Yeah.
So that also makes you again become more aggressive.
Yeah.
And when you are going there, you are going to revenge.
Mm.
You are like going to revenge now. You say, hey, let me now show them that me, I'm not a buyer.
Yeah.
All this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing become now, you know, chaotic.
Yeah. Okay.
So
Tate Buena, don't you think that it's not a lesson that we must teach the boys, and a lesson that we must teach the boys and the girls, that everybody's body is important, everybody's emotions are important regardless of their gender?
It's important, man.
Yeah. I think that we must teach our sons that the system is not going to back them up. The system is going to incarcerate them. The system is going to throw them in jail because they beat a girl. So they must understand this. It's not that girls are allowed to do whatever they want. It is just that the system is rigged against them. And the sooner they understand this, the more better they would cope within a country that is, within a system that is rigged against them.
Exactly.
Mm.
You're actually correct. So, and those are some of the things that we need to then highlight in our interaction.
Mm.
So at least I'm sure the change will take place.
Mm.
Learning will take place. So I think let's just keep on saying those, what you are saying.
Mm.
So in the process, at the end of the day, we reap the good result, I think.
I think it's going to be a wonderful
thing. Then you have a better society.
Yeah, we will.
Mm. Thank you very much, Matria.
All right, Tate Buena, thank you so much.
Good night.
Good night. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How are you guys doing? Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the struggles of being a black man in contemporary Namibia. Now, we have spoken about gender-based violence. We've spoken about discrimination. I want us to also look at the fields of education. Ladies and gentlemen, I feel like we look at education and we think that this is for men and this is for women. And we just then run with it and decide that we are not going to do something even if we have the heart for it. But yet, wouldn't you say that being a gynecologist is a woman's job? But yet there are so many women, so many men in the gynecology field, ne? That I don't know. I don't know, because I'm having this mind that says like, oh, no, this is a woman's thing. This is a woman's thing. Because I mean, you're dealing with women. Wouldn't it be ideal to be a woman as well? But yet there's a shift there. So now my question is, why is it a commodity that side? Why are there so many men in the gynecology field, but then there are so few in the psychology field, in a field where they can actually help one another with trauma, they can help each other with post-traumatic stress, they can help with each other with disorders, they can help each other, literally, but yet they don't want that field. But I don't understand why they don't want that field. Ladies and gentlemen, when we're talking about what it feels to be a black man, what are the struggles of being a black man, and maybe, just maybe, we can also dive into what Africa represents. Ladies and gentlemen, all the clips that we are playing are strictly for learning purposes and illustration purposes. We are diving into a conversation that needs to be spoken about.
Find it strange if you were to meet a French child who was born and bred in France, was schooled in a French government endorsed, curriculum, yet cannot speak French, and did history, but cannot tell you anything deeply substantial about French national history. Now I worry because I feel that that's somehow where our, African children are heading to. Now, after years of African slavery, Namibia's 20-odd years of independence from both the colonial and apartheid regime, as well as a continent that is flourishing with so many opportunities today, my desire is to share with you what I believe are some of our secrets to unleashing Africa's potential. Now, as important as it is for us to call upon each other as Africans to rise, innovate, and build is, I think it's just as important that we begin to look and analyze how we plan on creating a sense of African self-determination and African self-actualization as a people in order for us to progress. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized the need for genuine discourse amongst ourselves as the African youth, and as well as to the youth, to our elders, as to what we deem to be the progression of African self-determination. I'll start off with language and cultural preservation. I remember being in fourth grade and my teacher came up to me and told me, okay, now it's a new year, it's time, you have to start learning Afrikaans. Now, for our global community that's watching this, Afrikaans is an originally Dutch-based language spoken by originally white settlers that settled both in Namibia and South Africa. I remember asking her, okay, but why can't I learn my mother tongue of Oshiwambo at school? And she said, well, that's just not possible, right? Now, it appears to me that there might be a passivity to some superimposed pre-colonial policies that were put back in the day, and which somehow still continue to till today, right? And I've heard that I've heard some arguments that say it's in the name of civilization and the like, of which I'm quick to mention the shallowness of it all, for I'm yet to see a civilized society that did not embrace its cultural heritage and mainly its languages. Recently, I was in South Africa and, I left Namibia and I went to South Africa and I met a guy by the name of Matthew. But before I tell you that story, I suppose one argument with the civilization point is that the irony of it all is that the countries that we wish to imitate in the name of civilization, they protect their cultures. They protect their cultures so much so that sometimes they won't even render someone a visa to come into their country sometimes if someone doesn't have competent knowledge of their language, right? Now, back to Matthew. Now, Matthew is a South African with English heritage, and he went to a primary school where he had the opportunity to learn isiZulu. And he was telling me how when he got to high school, he was no longer offered the opportunity, the school just didn't offer isiZulu to teach. And he said to me that being a white African, Teleni, I feel that learning a purely African language is an integral part of me proclaiming my African identity as a white person, yet I wasn't offered the opportunity to excel in a purely African language. Now, I was tempted to joke to him that here I am, a young Namibian lady born and bred in Namibia and having schooled here as well, but I also wasn't offered the opportunity to learn my mother tongue at school. So, although I speak two dialects of my language fairly well, and I made the conscious decision to begin reading and writing my language, I have to admit that I somehow feel that my reading and my speaking is sometimes still wanting, and I desire to one day read bedtime stories in Oshiwambo to my children one day, and it kind of pains me that, I'm not that excellent at it, right? This also goes to speak into the continued and possibly perpetuated systematic extinction of our African languages, which really, really bothers me. I also wonder sometimes whether the German kids born and bred in Namibia and whom I schooled with would easily and gladly learn a purely Namibian language in their school, be it Oshiererro, Damara, or even Rakangwali, as I, the Owambo child, had no option or was given no other option but to learn their language in my school. Now, let I not be misunderstood. The notion of increasing one's lingual capacity by learning non-native languages is a beautiful one, and I'm totally for it, right? It's also fair to mention that I am aware that there are some schools that do offer indigenous languages in our schools, sometimes on a mandatory basis, and sometimes more so in our urban areas on an optional basis. But then again, I challenge our elders that next time when they ask us why we misspelt a native word while we reply to them on an SMS, are you coming home? Maybe I challenge them that they maybe ought to ask our schools why they're not prioritizing teaching their kids how to read and write the native language. I also challenge our elders that next time they ask us why our peers are wearing weaves of Western and Eastern origin, I challenge them that they first ask the schools why some of them still uphold policies that allow for them to forbid, expel, and even threaten Black girls who come to school in their natural hair, in locks, and even braids. And to be quite honest, sometimes I question how constitutionally sound some of those school policies are, because when you think about it, there's the constitutional right to not be discriminated by race, and there's our constitution upholds cultural spirit and encourages, for our cultural spirit. And so I think about, okay, but here's this Black girl rocking her Black hair, and now she's being sent home. Would she be sent home if she wore a weave? Now, it's not so much about my preference to hair, clothing, or language as it is the need to record, protect, and preserve our African identity our African identity as a people, really. So let me move on to my next point, African history. I believe there's a huge need for Africans to really, really write their own stories, our own truths, and that we begin to teach our children the stories of our warriors, the change makers, and the pioneers of our African lands. And I don't mean a simple, like, one or two page summary of what Oliver Tambo or Mandemu Demfayo did for our lands, but an intensive, intensive teaching on our forefathers. I have friends who schooled in African schools, be it Namibia or where else, yet can go to university, having written local and international exams, history exams, yet can go to university and not being able to tell in all confidence and fullness what Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, Malcolm X, Bram Fischer, or even Sam Nyoma did for our African lands. And sadly, in comparison, they're more likely to be knowledgeable on Western and even Eastern history as prescribed by our general curriculums. Now, I don't believe it would be wise for us not to teach Western and even Eastern history. Yet I ask and I beg for us that we ought to question how we plan on painting our walls as Africans with our walls with self-determination and self-actualizations as Africans if we're not teaching our children where they're fully coming from in order to equip and catapult them to where we wish them to go. So I beg to ask, as a child, as an African youth, who is writing the stories that we're teaching our children? Because I'm not seeing enough glory, enough celebration, and enough sincere documentation of the struggles we fought, the battles we won, and are winning as an independent Namibia and a more free Africa. As recently quoted by the late Kumla Dumar, until a lion learns how to write, the story will always glorify the hunter. And we have so many of our historic libraries dying on a daily when we bury one of our elders. I strongly believe that we need more of our Namibian writers, such as the likes of Elena Miller, who wrote The Price of Freedom, and Kaleni Hiyalwa, who wrote Mekulu's Children, as well as amazing Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, the late Chinua Achebe, and even Maya Angelou should be more of our prescribed literature within our African schools, not only here, but in the diaspora. I was mainly offered Western literature in high school and even primary school, of which were lovely. Yet the dying thirst to know and read about our African stories had to be filled from the shelves of my parents' book collections. Now, I believe we need to realize that we make the fight for progression as a people, as an African people, twice as hard, again, if we do not teach ourselves who we are and where we're coming from. And then we move on. The times and the changes. Just recently, while the world celebrated Tatekulu Nelson Mandela's life, on the day of his memorial service, I was in the village at my grandmother's homestead, and I was seated under the tree with her, cracking a marula nuts while listening to the radio, her battery-charged radio, to get updates on the memorial service. Now, there was no option for Twitter updates for me in that moment because, I mean, the nearest electricity hub was a nearby cooker shop where my phone had been sent to get charged. Now, this leads me to a crucial point that needs to be duly acknowledged and properly understood. Namibia, alongside some other similar countries, stands as one of the countries that experienced about three ages within three consecutive generations. So we have Mekulus and Tatekulus, which means grandmothers and grandfathers, who grew up in the agrarian age, in its peak and in its last days. We have our parents who were the first to, well, like for instance, my parents were the first to have gone to formal education, the first in the entire bloodline. So all the way from primary education to becoming Ivy League graduates like my mom. And then you get my peers, who are of the digital slash information age and might obtain a qualification, yet that doesn't necessarily equate to financial success in a well-paying job. So while more of the well-developed countries might have experienced one age over several generations of a people, we went through it really fast. So that leaves us with Mekulus, who are amazed at how a baby knows how to operate this weird human invention called an iPad. We have fathers struggling how to teach their children financial wisdom in a capitalist-run economy because it is their first time living out this model of living. And then you get young boys and girls, or toddlers turned young boys and girls, who will protest to you as to why they do not have to learn the multiplications table off by heart, because they are so sure that the calculator is not going to become extinct anytime soon in the digital age we're in. And I've heard those arguments before. Now, it might sound lighthearted, and it really holds its beauties, but what the essential thing that we need to understand here is that we have elders specialized in industrial age-based teaching methods and that are creating and teaching curriculums in this industrial age-based way to children who are fast moving away from that way of thinking or doing. I have a huge and burning passion for education, having parents that are both educators in their own right. And I believe that the time has come for us to acknowledge that the world is no longer looking for children who can quote the definition of photosynthesis as written verbatim from an encyclopedic textbook, but rather the child who knows how to use Google and not just find out what the definition of photosynthesis is, but also give the teacher the scientific formula of chlorophyll. So, considering all of this, this would really mean reshaping the way in which we teach our children on the four pillars that research has identified today. So, our education. The four pillars would be how to think, encouraging kids to think creativity, critical analysis, problem solving, decision making, and the like, and learning as opposed to regurgitating. Number two, how to work, emphasizing.
Tired of being stuck in queues or left on hold? Our online sign-up lets you get the connection you need in just a few minutes. Simply head to paratus.africa/Namibia and press the online sign-up button. Then choose from our exciting ranges of fiber, Sky-Fi or mobile LTE products. Fill in the application form and you're already done. Of course, you'll also enjoy free installation on your new package. Sign up online today to enjoy effortless connectivity.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, as we proceed with our lecture.
This would really mean reshaping the way in which we teach our children on the four pillars that research has identified today. So our education. The four pillars would be how to think, encouraging kids to think creativity, critical analysis, problem solving, decision making, and the like, and learning as opposed to regurgitating. Number two, how to work, emphasizing communication and, and collaboration through more project-based learning without, of course, removing the importance of individual and introspective learning time. Number three, tools for working. Beyond the basics of reading, writing, and counting, also ensuring ICT literacy for the kids to be able to use technology as a tool, not only to research, but organize and communicate effectively. And lastly, the skills for living in the 21st century. So creating environments, that the schools create environments that help to foster within the children not only academic intelligence, but emotional intelligence, financial intelligence, allowing the kids to know of spiritual awareness, teaching them healthy lifestyle living, teaching them personal as well as social responsibilities and their civil rights and duties as a people of a nation. Whenever I think of Namibia, I'm tempted to think of Singapore's educational success story. We have Sir Lee Kuan Yew, who revamped the entire nation on education, customizing it, and who had an unquestionable tenacity to excellence on a national education level. So now, being a professional in the television and broadcast industry, as well as having a passion for education, I'm asking us to take seriously, us as Africans, the making and broadcasting of our own stories. This will help us educate, inspire, and understand each other more. I've heard that the telling of a story is known to increase one's emotional intelligence by double the percentage than that of simply releasing facts to someone in the hope that it'll influence them and change their mind. Now, the media and the arts is used to reflect to people who they are, where they come from, what their struggles are, their aspirations, their failures and successes. Now, it would be unfair for me to leave the stage tonight without congratulating and just really giving praise to our Nigerian brothers and sisters, for they have truly spearheaded us as Africans, African storytelling, into a new wave of sharing our stories. And it's exciting to see a people who, after so long, have been starved of dignity and self-actualization, we're finally being able to tell our stories, our way, for us, for our consumption. And I believe it is so necessary, for it is truly Africa's time. Therefore, before I walk off the stage tonight, I would like to leave you with my propositions, my ideas worth sharing in order for us to unleash our potential as Africans further. One, by proactively protecting and encouraging our African identity within our very schools. This means teaching our languages and allowing kids to withhold and keep their cultural heritage in the schools. Number two, to develop and nurture our African writers and our stories. It's about time that we teach our children our African stories written by us and taking it seriously as we ensure to teach them the stories of others. Number three, to acknowledge the truth of the 21st century as well as holistic education. This will help us in getting to the knowledge-based economies many of our African countries wish to enter into. And number four, continuing the movement of African storytelling. So the making, the broadcasting, and the distribution, all intentionally so as to teach ourselves who we are and also teach the rest of the world who we truly are and not just what seems to be dictated by the global media of what Africa is, starving children and the like. So I believe what we teach our children, how we teach them, and whom we allow to dictate our realities to us as a people are the ingredients to releasing Africa's potency further. And those are my ideas worth sharing. Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good evening. The number in studio is 0832888401. Ladies and gentlemen, we're diving into being black. We're diving into being a man. We're diving into the challenges and the ideas that the 21st century man faces. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the reason why our men are going through the turmoil they are going through, and what is it, ladies and gentlemen? We're just diving in. I really, in all honesty, want to know, right? What happens along the way? So the reason that I played the clip of Unleashing Africa's African Potential is because I believe that the identity crisis that our men face is an identity crisis that most women face as well. It's only that women's roles are not too difficult because women have been given the position of nurturer, have been given the position of matriarch, have been given the position of Mother Nature. And men are left on the sideline to somehow find their identity within a society that doesn't really care if they have an identity or not. As long as they're there, sometimes we can use them, sometimes we don't need to use them, and sometimes we can get from them, and sometimes we don't have to get from them, and they are not a constant. Ladies and gentlemen, my query has been that of great significance when we are talking about the boy child that's not graduating. My question is, what happens along the way to deter this young person, to make them make a U-turn, to become somebody else? Is it because they were never really going for the graduation gown? They were not going for the paper. They were not going for the job. They were not going for the blueprint that was fed to us by force and has worked for so many. Or is it just within their nature? My question is, if you are a dropout, I'm asking why. Why did you drop out? Why are you not successful? Why? What happened? And also, I want to know about your struggles, and I want to know about what is involved in being a boy child and being a black man in this country. What is it? These are questions that I can't understand because, I can't answer because I'm not a black man. But I would really like to know. So one of the few things that we have identified is this discrimination amongst the genders within the workplace. And then there's poverty in the eye of the system that can fund your dreams. So poverty means that the institutions that are capable of funding you and making your dream a reality need you to have money before they can give you money. Now, I don't understand how that can be possible. If I'm coming to you for assistance, financial assistance, it is because I don't have finances. Now, the system that says that you have to have money in order for us to give you money is one that I don't really fully understand. That collateral business. Now, where am I going to find a car to put up as collateral? Where am I going to find a house to put up as collateral if I'm saying that I need you guys to give me money so that I can go and start my business and I can be a success? I want to know why is it that the girls soldier on and the boys somehow just fall out? And when they do fall out, where do they go? Do they go to the robots? Do they go to the bar? They go to the gambling houses? They go to the casino? Or they go to VTC? Where does the boy child go when they drop out of what seemed to be something that was bound to be lucrative one day and also something that was bound to fix them for life, and they just leave it midway? What happens? What happens? What is it? So once upon a time, a friend of mine had been dating this particular gentleman for maybe 5 years or 7 years. I'm not even really sure anymore. And eventually they decided that, you know what? I think it's time. Let us get a baby. They were all for it, right? They got a baby because this gentleman was also about to start work. You know, he was studying accounting at the university, and he was about to really make it. And when we look at accounting, for example, we respect accountants because they deal with money. And also, the idea that I have, at least, is that accountants have money because they deal with money. It's just, it might be a lay way of looking at it, but that is honestly what I see. I feel that accounting is just a good field, you know? It's not one that is exaggerated and glorified, but it is one that is stable, one that is consistent, and one that is grounded. Right? I've never seen an accountant begging for anything. I've never seen an accountant suffering. I've seen everybody else suffering. I've seen doctors suffering. I've seen lawyers suffering. I've seen everybody else suffering, but not an accountant. I've always seen accountants staying above level. They're staying above the water. And everybody else sinks, but I've never seen an accountant sink. So, we are looking at it like, yes, this is a great field. This is a good thing. And they decided that they are going to start their little family. And the plan was to eventually get married and I'm telling you now, in this man's final year, he just decides to go rogue. He decides to drop out. Before the internship and everything, he decides to drop out. He decides to go back home and he decides to just become a person that is drinking alcohol. That's it. And no future prospects, no nothing. He just decides that that is what he's going to do. Now, my question is, with a baby on the way and a person that you have made a plan with and your life seeming solid, especially there by finances, because he was being funded. So it's not parents ran out of money or anything. He was funded. You know, Nasfaf came through. He was being funded. So my question was, why did he go home? Why did he go and sit at home and just decide that, you know what? This is going to be my life now. I'm just going to be a person that we would call a couch potato or we would call a bum, but we don't want to insult anybody. So we'll just say this is what he chose. Why did he choose that? These are questions that baffle me. These are questions that keep me up at night some nights when I'm really thinking about it. If you are so close to the finish line, then why aren't you finishing? What's wrong? What happened? And I feel that even when you look at the first year class, to be honest, even when you look at the first year class, the boys do make it to varsity. The boys make it to varsity. They just don't make it to the finish line. And I don't understand why. Because every single first year class that I've sat in, and mind you, I've sat in a couple of those. I've sat in a few of those, right? I can say that the ratio was roughly the same. It was 50-50. So why are we sitting with 80% female graduates and 20% male graduates? Is it because nobody's willing to pay for them? Is it because life and its struggles, it's so hard, or what is it? The one thing that I've noticed about the one struggle that I can identify about the Namibian man is that the Namibian man is a traumatized man. The Namibian man is a man that has gone through hardships that he will never talk about. The Namibian man is a man that has experienced things and seen things and been a part of things that he has not processed and has not taken into account and has not allowed himself to feel. And as a result, this now oozes out of him. It oozes out of him and it stains every single place he goes and everything he touches because he's oozing it. And there is not much we can do about it because 90% of the time when you need to assist him or when you want to assist him or when the time is right to assist him, the male doesn't want to be assisted. The male doesn't want to speak. The male doesn't want to participate and be part and parcel of the conversation that is beneficial to him in any way at all. The male doesn't want to participate. Now, why doesn't the black male want to participate if the life that he's living is not nice? Is it shame? Is it fear? Or is it lack of expression? How do our men express themselves? Do they express themselves through violence and anger? Do they express themselves through rage and frustration? Do they express themselves with a straight face and turn around and cry on the other side? Are they even allowed to cry? Because when we look at the unaliving situation, or let's say the suicide situation amongst the men, I can guarantee you that everybody that was around that man would tell you that they didn't see it coming. How did they not see it coming? Is it because the male is a great pretender? Is it because the male was not really bothered? Is it because the male where was the male? Where was he? And also, another question would be, or another saying would be that, the graduates, the boy child is not graduating with us. We have established this, but are the boy children interested in education? Are the boy children interested in going to school? And if they are, then why are they not excelling at the school? And if they are not, what are they interested in then? What is it that makes that boils your system? What is it that makes you happy so that maybe we can push that agenda instead and then give you the peace and the relief and the happiness that you so long for and you so desire? Because if we are looking at the education system and the way that you guys are doing, I would disagree. I would completely disagree with you saying that I really want to do this, because the statistics are proving something else. So is the boy child interested in education? Does he like school? The boy child, does he like school? Does he like learning? Does he like learning from others that know? Or is the boy child a species that wants to teach themselves? They want to learn by themselves. And are they invested in school? Are they interested in school? Do they want school? Those are the questions that you have to, I think that those are questions that we have to start asking our children. Not just how was school? Because many of us ask how was school, and then we get the whole story and the paragraph of how school went down. And somewhere along the way, if you are a parent like me, somewhere along the way, you lose focus of the story because the story is just so long. You lose focus of the story, and then you just start saying, because the story is so long, and you are just trying to see if you can make it out of the story without bruising your little person's ego and also hurting them. Do we listen to the black man? And does the black man speak in order for us to listen? Or does the black man address himself in a different kind of way? Good evening.
Sorry, once more.
Again. No problem, customer.
Now, when I was listening to the...
To Unleashing African Potential, the lecture.
Oh, that's the top, Unleashing African Potential?
Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
From an African youth perspective.
From African youth perspective.
Yeah.
Where are those type of views? Where are they? Are they?
They are around, but they are very, very quiet. They are around.
Because they are not searched so that we look for them and bring them to come and transform us.
I believe that it is a matter of interest.
Yes. And yeah. The interest that we need to steer.
To have. We need to have the interest. Do we have interest in becoming better? Do we have interest in learning and seeing our potential, or do we have interest in epunya punya no cook?
Yes, you need to have those kind of interest.
Yeah.
Well, when you are some kind of summarizing summing up the whole thing, and you think this story, the boy child, the what, all those things that you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like your katevo.
Yeah.
And now, who is actually now? I know you are telling this world. Single FM is everywhere. It's connected in UK, Russia. You are hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Now the organization of these stories, the Mekurus and all these other stories.
Yeah.
I know they are getting in. They are being. You are disseminating information.
Mm-hmm. I believe that the black man doesn't have an identity. And I believe that the black man is suffering from an identity crisis. Hence why he can't achieve much in a world that is functional and going forward with or without him. He has no idea who he is.
You were also asking the questions again.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Like the example of the accountant.
Yeah. Why? And you know, it's a very sad story, ne? Because he's still just like that, huh?
Very sad,
yeah? Yeah. Ooh, final year,
Shirishidiara. After they have planned.
Yeah, 7 years of a relationship.
Things, and the woman, this is really sad. You know what? That's why yesterday I mentioned that many a times the people who usually go and stay home.
Mm-hmm.
And then become the alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And then addict, and then they just become home there.
Mm-hmm.
So and then they are waiting for the mother or father or sister and all these kind of things.
Yeah.
They are usually, many of them have tested university and those are high level.
Yes.
But the ones that you find maybe grade 5, 10 there, and then drop out,
mm-hmm.
And those ones, you find them within the Makaranyana.
Yes.
Doing something.
Yes.
But these are the ones here, especially the graduates.
Yeah.
And these are the ones who can innovate, they have the knowledge, mm-hmm. they have achieved something. Even if you are not finished at that moment.
Yeah.
Your interest must be so much boosted, and you know, you mentioned about emotional intelligence and everything. Mm-hmm. So that one I cannot, the unleashing the African potential.
Mm-hmm.
That one I cannot, I won't even, so I understand, and I was trying to write fast, and I say yes.
Mm-hmm.
These are the ones. Like she said, many of these things were actually deprived from us.
Yeah.
So even when you look at the constitutionality,
mm-hmm.
look at the everything,
mm-hmm.
but then, like she said, she found herself in the environment where she had to learn the other indigenous language,
mm-hmm.
even though they are also very important, but she couldn't learn her own indigenous language.
Mm-hmm.
You can see.
So now one question also, Tatebwana. When we talk about discrimination, right? We talk about a constitutional right. We talk about a constitution that is the embodiment of what Namibia should be and what we should follow. It is a law that governs us, right? And particularly chapter 3 is a chapter that is meant for the human being. It is meant for the human being with or without status. It is meant for the human being that is up there or down here. Now, this is the constitution. Constitution, right? And right now, in contemporary times, we are pushing the agenda of the girl child. But is pushing the agenda of the girl child and excluding the boy child not grounds for discrimination, which is now against the very constitution that governs us? Because if we are saying that we are governed by the constitution and we are governed by chapter 3, right? Then we should say that we should not be discriminated against on the grounds of color, on the grounds of sex, on the grounds of status, of creed, of anything, ethnic group, religion, we should not be discriminated against. But what do you call it when a specific, what do we call it, right? When an entire movement that is also part of government is only sorting out to sustain and maintain one species, which is the girl child, and completely ignoring and excluding the boy child, is that not grounds for discrimination?
Yeah, well, one can justify it, but then when it now comes to the legal, the intention.
Mm-hmm. The intention is to build the girl child, right?
Yes.
But shouldn't the intention be to build the Namibian child? Because children are children, right?
Yes, they will tell you that, yes, those who are interested, they can take up the program and promote it and advocate it.
Okay, but how do I promote something that is written, right? For women and children?
Yes, that's where the...
Not even for women and children. It's written, the girl child. Yes. Now, how do I, the boy child, have a poster that is written, I'm in the organization of the girl child? How?
Yes.
If the discrimination is in your name.
Yes, there you can have the grounds,
mm-hmm.
the justification there. Mm. And I'm sure that one holds water.
Mm.
So, and the only problem is that, the only challenge is that, yes, even though we have got, I was actually arguing the same way you are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I argue that yes, this policy of women economic empowerment from the beginning.
Mm.
I said this policy, it has got some element of discrimination.
Yes.
Because one, even if you look at in the past,
mm-hmm.
where you now say yes, when the movement of feminism and all these things started, mm-hmm. maybe the really women were really discriminated.
Yeah.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Then from that time up to this time around in our modern contemporary world,
mm-hmm.
So, and then you are still saying that women and economic empowerment. Mm. That's why they were moving from women affair,
mm-hmm.
Minister of Women and what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they started from there and then now it become Minister of Gender Equality and what.
Mm.
So now all this, and we have been saying, even the language itself,
mm-hmm.
and you still hear those things in boardroom there. And,
yeah.
and you say, no. Why do we have to have Yes. We know, but when you look at this thing, and when you observe and research properly, you find out that in almost everywhere, whether it's the people are saying, sometimes it's because they want funding.
Yeah.
And then you want funding at the expenses of more problems, violence, yeah. and all these
yes.
other things. I'm telling you.
Now we get the funding, but we break a society. But for what? We get the funding and then our whole entire society is broken because we have been oppressing one.
I'm happy to see you people, you were looking at the constitution.
Mm.
But some of this policy, some mm-hmm. of these directives, some of these issues, do not comply
yeah.
with the constitution.
Mm.
They are the one who are actually causing more damage, and they are being implemented unnoticed.
Yeah,
because you see those invisible things that you always talk about, and if we do not put on, I don't know what, some kind of dissentiment, kind of spirit.
Mm.
To really look at them, they will keep on harming and causing more social and political chaos in our society.
Mm.
And we're not going to able. So that's why all your guests for lecture for yesterday and today,
mm-hmm.
to me, they are very unique.
Yeah.
And especially when these people are talking now, so from a legal perspective, because you know, I came to appreciate some of these things now because we allow these things to be happening.
Yeah,
you mentioned about the chapter 3, and all these things that nobody should tamper with it, but we are still hearing people tampering with it.
Yeah,
if you are coming up with a summit. And only targeting women.
Yeah.
And the men, maybe their portion in terms of the resources and whatever they can benefit. It's only such 20%. So how do you call that kind of research?
Yeah. And also, how do we now associate and affiliate ourselves to organizations that don't cater to the one thing that sets us aside? It doesn't cater to our agenda.
Do you know the reason why they were pressurizing Sioka? I used to feel Doreen. Pity for her. But Harrison, and then and somebody, he was like on the base side all the time. She was just like, her approach was just on that side. And we are saying, why do you, like you said, programs that are somehow discriminated? And even when you go and do some kind of situational analysis,
yeah,
they just tell you that, yes, we don't discriminate. We give everybody money, this one and this one and this one. But on the ground,
yeah,
women, economic empowerment,
mm-hmm.
the language,
mm-hmm.
the whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we all to blame ourselves.
And also, like, just to highlight something, Tatebwana, when we look at the majority of unemployed youth in this country, do they ever release the statistics on which genders are the majority or which gender is the majority? Or do they just tell us that we are at a high unemployment rate and we are at 48% of unemployment, or is it 52? I'm not even sure. I don't keep up because they don't specify on genders. Because if we were being specific and we were really targeting real change, we would also be very specific on who is actually unemployed here.
Yes.
Because we can't say the youth is very unemployed. We can maybe say the men are unemployed here.
Right.
Yes.
So those are still some of this. I think when you analyze these things, when we do this this situational analysis like you are saying now, that's exactly how it's supposed to be done.
Yes.
That's how it's supposed to be done. Or to be done. And that yes, so that you disaggregate data.
So that we understand. Okay. So right now we are having 52% unemployment in Namibia. Okay. Who are the majorities that are unemployed? Okay. Why are they unemployed? I feel like some of it trickles down straight back to here, back to the graduates. Because if we are having 20%, ne? 20% men and 80% women. Then we would still be disadvantaged when it comes to unemployment, right? But then we would still have a conversation of, then why are the men the most unemployed if they don't even graduate? Is it because they don't graduate?
You see, yes, but Andre, thank you very much for discerning and the comprehensive understanding on that thing. Your analysis and the input is welcome. And so I think we need to now further go further and do those sex disaggregated data and they identify that who are the mostly affected people, and that's how gender works. So about who are those mostly affected by this situation, maybe employment, by this other thing, by really looking at that situational analysis that you're talking about.
Because we have time, Tate Bwana, we have time to go and pull out statistics on who is the victim of gender-based violence, right? But we don't have statistics that also put the men at a vulnerable state. So roughly, we don't consider the men.
So today in the morning, you know, yesterday our discussion.
Yeah.
How the day was going, actually.
Yes.
It was just like, it was on the basis of your conversation yesterday night.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was listening to the morning, the NBC?
Mm-hmm.
The one that always starts in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So there were people that were talking, like a deputy commissioner, the one who worked for the police, and there was a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
They were now talking about gender issues,
mm-hmm.
issues of those things. Walaula, deputy commissioner Walaula. So now, when they were doing all this kind of a thing, they were talking about coming up with an integrated data system, So where now they will capture all the information across the sectors.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have that data system, the central data system.
Mm-hmm.
So now if, like you are saying, we do not have this type of information.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no way we can able to develop targeted intervention kind of programs, strategy.
So, you know, Tate Bwana, if we had more data analysis, right, it would also help our children from not going to study things that don't have a market. Because if we knew that the data says that in this country we only have two specialists that specialize in bones. We only have two specialists that specialize in what. If we had that kind of data at our fingertips, right, then maybe it would also help our young ones to choose career paths that are bound to get them in an office and not on the street.
So I think we just need to go back to the issues of adult education and lifelong learning that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then because this one directly starts from home.
Mm-hmm.
And I know DBH Commission, Walaula was talking about within the boundary of the home.
Mm-hmm.
And when you want to address gender-based violence.
Mm-hmm.
And as we do that, then we now start empowering the elders. Mm-hmm. You know, The lecture was talking about focusing on the parents, focusing on the students, focusing on everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So the elders now
talking
about and that is exactly what she was saying.
Mm.
When she was quoting about all this, in fact, all the teachers all the people that she quoted, all those Saketange, Dr. Saketange, they are all my teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And we need, so if we do not get to that level of analyzing and interpreting the data, because the data are so plenty now.
But I have a problem with us, Tate Bwana. Tate Bwana, the reason that we as Africans or we as Namibians are not educated on our own culture and our own heritage is because we were incapable of documenting ourselves, right? That is the argument.
We are not giving that opportunity.
That is the argument, right? Since for time and memoria, that's the argument that we did not know how to read and write and we did not know how to document. So that is why most of our issues remained within ourselves.
Yeah, was done very, very early.
Yeah, I know. I understand that. I understand that.
And to incapacitate you, I mean, to deprive you and to make you more ignorant,
mm-hmm.
so that you can then now be manipulated and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So I understand that. But then, right now, what is your excuse?
Yeah, at least now, that's why you see now.
Like right now, Tatebwana. Tatebwana, right now, if you go and research anything about indigenous plants within Namibia that can cure coughs, eh? There's no book about it. Why?
Well, you know, there is this other one. You are actually correct. You see, when she was talking,
mm-hmm.
I know this is from really maybe different professional background.
Mm-hmm.
But the little knowledge I can get, see, I can now see that she's from the legal professional.
Mm-hmm.
And then that now confuses me also, and also try to steer me up and make me a little bit understand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it comes to indigenous knowledge of Namibia,
yes,
like you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
and this is very, very crucial.
Mm-hmm.
When I read this book,
mm-hmm.
the one I have here,
mm-hmm.
Indigenous Knowledge of Namibia, you just mentioned about those herbs, those things that can cure, those plants.
Mm-hmm.
And they are in this book.
Mm-hmm.
So as you are talking,
mm-hmm.
most of the words, me, I do not understand them
mm-hmm.
in English. So now even in Oshwambo again,
mm-hmm.
I do not understand. That's why I was also feeling pity, and I feel so when she was saying, yeah, you know, there are also opportunities where you want to teach my children in Oshwambo.
Mm-hmm.
But I do not understand. I don't know most of these concepts and terms.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at myself. Tatebwana, do your children?
Do your children know? Tatebwana, do your children know how to read and write Oshindonga? Or is it only the first one? Only the first one, because the first one used to stay with Mekulu somewhere there. Eh? The next one that you went to stay with alone, but see, I also want to parent my kids. Eh? You guys are parenting in English. Now you have to become an expert in English, otherwise you'll never understand your kids, because your kids are Eshiyam. Eh?
Oh,
my goodness.
Today that the grandma was asking that in class, how did you come to know you are more?
You know, I get that question a lot. I get that question. That particular question, I get that question a lot. Like, people don't expect me to speak Oshindonga.
Oh, Oshiri, eh? Aye, Oshiri, Shembere, Tanya. So those who are coming out, too,
mm-hmm.
the program again?
Mtuma. Umwele.
Sorry, the last one.
Which one? The lecture.
Yeah, the lecture.
Unleashing
African potential. So one of our lecturers was telling us, you know, this now is going to, indigenous laws.
Mm.
I think somebody just trampled on him. I say, all the things we knew them already.
Mm.
With the knowledge and everything here. Then they say, what happened?
You know, people that say things like that, ne? I always ask them, okay, so where's your book that you wrote now about your culture?
I don't know, maybe they don't have time, but I will.
How can you not have time, but you have time to argue it?
In fact, you have produced graduates.
Why are you arguing about something that you can just do yourself? You can literally just write a whole book about everything that your grandmother taught you, and we will learn.
And then we learn.
So now you people are waiting for Professor Disho to be the one to come and write about Kavangos.
He's very busy. So now that you just follow up all those graduates that you have produced. He said, yes, here they are. So now you send them in there. Maybe you facilitate for the funding and their skin and whatever.
Mm.
And you know, they start writing. That's why I was asking, I mean, you know, the former president, Dr. Lenangoro Mbuba. There was a time he was asking these professors. He said, you professors, and who will do this and this and this and that? You now say you are producing these people. You are producing these people to go in the street or what?
Your problem becomes our problem. So you are just overproducing, but you are not producing.
You are not even checking the market. You're not even checking the market.
So now you just keep planting potatoes while you know that we didn't even finish the potatoes that you gave us last week. No, you are telling us, you are like, you are like,
So I think as time goes on, we start reforming the system through you, and the administration, the people. I think you are you are actually useful instrument in the hand of God to transform and make it meaningful difference.
And maybe we heard to complain. We must just be fighting all the time. Because even like you know, ne that sometimes you want to find out kucha or shishinginingero torowa. Eh? Wapungwa andora kucha undwete tandirowa man. Nandiyu tareko YouTube ahu yandika chekengera andirowa. Shashino, our people are documenting. But until today, there is no real content that is coming out of Namibia. And my question is, why? And even the content that is out there, ne, they don't push for this content, I'm telling you.
You know, what I think is not money. Maybe it's just like to really stir up their confidence.
All of them are so consumed by the West, ne? That we are doing everything of the West and the Europeans. And we neglect our own thing.
We must re-educate.
How can we re-educate Tatebwana when they know? Everybody knows. Everybody is educated here. Everybody knows, Kucha, the reason that we don't have any history, real history in terms of where the origins of our family and our people came from, is because our people couldn't read and write, and that was the upper hand of the colonizer. That was why the picture was so distorted along the way because of translation. Marane peife mesimbondituri in the times that we are in, my dear.
Let me ask this question.
Please ask me that question.
Before now the colonizer came.
With their books and their pens.
They have a form of writing. And then communicating those writing or information into our sense or where. So I'm thinking of the table of The Moses, the Ten Commandments. And I was also looking at the table of Ten Tables, something like that. I still feel that those who were written, not the one that were written at the bottom of our hearts,
Yeah.
Because there are those who were written
mm-hmm.
at the bottom of our hearts that yes, this other one here
mm.
is prescribed by the natural law.
Mm.
Yes, let me put in that manner.
Mm.
So now, and this other one was not allowed. This one was written, you know already that when you just come into existence,
mm-hmm.
you know that, yes, this one, yes, mm-hmm. it's not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
And this one's the law permits.
Yes.
So now those things that were written at the bottom of our heart,
mm-hmm.
and those other ones that were written, mm-hmm. Like Moses,
mm-hmm.
those 10 commandments, for example, and those 10 commandments, I think that's where they develop a lot of precepts and all these things writing.
Mm-hmm.
So, were they not there at all?
No.
Before when the colonizer came? Mm-hmm. Was it only in the spoken word? And maybe
it was most now just in the spoken word and just
the sign language.
Yeah.
Oh, I think we, yes, it's true that we need to go to get to.
Mara, pay for technology. Pay that any. So what is our excuse now? Why are we not documenting what is happening to us now? So,
Maybe that question will also come to us, because when I was listening to many of these people who were retiring and all those things, they said they will have more time to write their what and document.
How many of them have sent us their drafts? Ha! Don't laugh at your peers.
You must organize us very
ha. Andi mutura kumwenshiri. Shashino. You know, now that I retire, I can write and I can, where is the first draft? Or is this not serious? Why are you taking 10 years? You are 70 now, people retired at 60. Why are you taking 10 years to write your history? So now the only piece of information we'll ever have about a past that comes from you is your eulogy or what? Aye. Anu akara ta susa anu, yafata susu unona.
Amuhe,
do you know that all of you people, all of you, andika shangi ni maje, nguwa nyengwa kuishanga peife, penjeneo drafa, give me the draft, ndileshe mokucho wa shangere ikeshuwa ileko kasing. Aye, nothing, zero. Aka sarande ta fumvi kwake. Aka sarande ta fumvi kwako. Ke pangirona na mibia ta mevi. Ngeshi yazire mevi. And it is nothing. Mash po party mpe apo 60th party shita umbiro o party conference nu nona. Otandika andika shangini mash. Ikwashike. O drafo iri peni ne. 10 years of being at home doing nothing. Mwaha kuturombwela that after 50 years, ne? Because now you are 60, atu yaruranga from the age of 10, and dishi. After 50 years, you mean to say you have nothing to say?
Oh, there are so many.
Oh. And after 50 years, wushisha, no, kucha. The colonizer won because us, we didn't have the power of writing down our own history. That is why the Finnish are the ones that wrote our history.
I'm still asking.
Mm-hmm.
If we have got the system of, we had our own legal system, we have our own governance system, our indigenous system, how to regulate ourselves, how to conduct ourselves.
Tata Buana, you as a person, you just write, ne? You just sit down and then you write the Oshukwanyama legal system.
It's true, eh?
What happened? Yes. It's not even being tribalist, ne? It's explaining what the Kwanyamas did in their legal system. Then you, the Damara comes and says the Damara legal system within a customary system.
You know what you are talking about. There are those institutions.
Embulo da vena, embulo da vena, shashovesh kushang. Peve shimushi kushanga nyumashanga ike.
You know what we do can do, ne?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we need to specifically come up with some kind of program that are tailor made, and then you now, like you said, you gather us.
Mm-hmm.
You gather us.
Antu kwantu. The community will not even allow you to beat me up. Do you know how many? How many law students would understand law better if we had books about our own legal system within our communal lands?
We are looking forward to see how that.
Then we can even link it, Kucha. Okay, so this one has similarities to the Roman Dutch. This one has the similarities to civil. This one has similarities. Manye, chelet next has scrape me. Eh? Na shangasha. My retirement at Talando back is any. Eh? Tell him, Maria and Malala. Yeah? Every day, Muka on drop. Yeah. So, shady show. No magaroma pe, yeah. Talandu safari, tamuimo okaki, talandu umburu kwe aweni, taningipo anafara ma for 2 years, yeah. Poor.
I think guys, we seriously need, when you look at the system, the one that the John Walenga, the conversation that John Walenga had with Wiki, and it's looking at the, I don't know the originality of some of these ideas, because Wiki was giving an example of Ojove, how Mekulu started maybe gathering those Ngongo, and then they pulled them, they cut them. You know, Okutenda, Tabitenda, Tabitongo,
And also, you also have to ask yourself, why is, did you know that Ojove is part of the peanut family? Kanshisha. Somebody that is allergic to peanuts, ne, to nuts, cannot eat Ojove.
Apparently.
Oof.
Now, all those things they were talking about, and they up to until the final product, and they discovered that they were even doing some of the, I think the impression, I'm talking about a correction here, and they were saying that most of these products that you find in Europe, whether it's in the forms of songs, form of stories, they are just being redesigned.
Man, you can shukushanga most of note.
Oh, Nando, even all of them.
Shashi, no, the excuse was, the reason that our history is not documented is because we couldn't read and write. Now that you can read and write, where is your history that you documented?
I think one of the ways for us to find out and start documenting.
Mm-hmm.
They also might not have enough time to do that. Or maybe the old
then
one...
Then they must not complain.
The old one, they have, because I know they have a lot of diaries in their possessions.
Mm.
If I tell you the kind of books that I have, especially now, even the Eagle FM.
Mm.
So I used to buy those notes, those big notebooks.
Mm.
They get finished.
Then you must take your things. You must take your things to a typist, and then your typist takes it to an editor, and then they compile your things.
Yes, you know the only good thing that the starting point I think for us to have a complete kind of things in many other ones, even those that you'll be gathering, is now to now have the sharp ones, the young ones. And we can put to, in front of us, we can put to this one, whether they liked or not. We use the registration there for this UNESCO and UN bodies and all these things. The ones that are really, those ones that are obligated to do these things and put finance there. And the graduating, we are going to help them in Etumba and others. Who are saying that those graduates, they get into the system and then they, you know, so the UN and all these other bodies, FAIS and everybody.
So, Tatibwana, did you read Libertina Madira's book?
I haven't read it, but I listened to her.
What did the book say? What did she say about
the book?
I'm saying, what did she say about the book? What is the book about?
I've not read the book. I've not even known that she produced a book.
She produced a book over a decade ago, my dear. Maybe 2 decades now.
2 decades ago. But I only know that her focus has been on the, especially the last time. So I know her book, how she was on the, before even she became a health minister, she was on local government. And how she came up with some of those Omatala single quarters, and then she went on the program.
So it's basically just a eulogy.
The Sun People, and then how she, the program that she started, and they are still going on there. And I know very little about this. So, you know, this place, I heard it first from her. And they said, this is what is applicable, is happening to me also. See, somebody that goes to bed very late, he comes to bed early, and then wake up early. And all these other things. No, I haven't read that book. Please, I would like to have a copy of that book.
You must just go to book then.
I'll look for it.
So part of my issue with Namibian authors is that they are all giving us an autobiography. They're all just telling us about their themselves only.
They have no time, man. Right.
What are they doing?
Oh, they're enjoying it.
Oh, okay. Then they must not complain. When again, in 50 years' time, the people that are going to be alive in 50 years' time are going to say things like, our people didn't know how to read and write, and that's why our lives are not documented.
That's why I'm saying you need to have some researchers there. Then you coordinate those ones, and then they start to look at the diaries, look at the everything, and then have them some kind of interview. With those people, and then those people will document and cite from those sources and say, yeah, and this and that. So in that issue, you have information documented.
Tatebwana, there's a bush or onti. Awunua Kongobe. Ngere o ongobe ita ita ivara nde eshiketali tarika katerem.
Yena ano puna miti tendo dajiringa. Even you know that even the plants The one that you were taught by my father. Kuchamede ido kupe endo ondongi. Tuwete endo ondongi nga apune misimbori nga kesha tukata long chung. Mentadi medinara waka dusha. Nogu nebe ya ask my brother. Atu nefanande nge no ondongi. Atu nefamoma uromu. Genge po endongi nepoka. Shari endongi na do. Mutune ngambo nuziza kucho dakwata kong kisi. Dakwata kong kisi epoka.
Yeah.
Do atu dimefane o nchumuri ponga o shimbodi shimwe.
Shanga ne.
Wewe aika pula?
Shanga, shawa pula mweto shanga. Mweto shanga. So that we know. So that me I can become a doctor with you people. Nganda hauka onganga?
Yes.
I want to be a nganga, but you people didn't write anything. Inanshangasha. So right now I have to heal my people with the Western people's medicine. Gandishari wanga iri hamano puo nani muyu nyomuni wanga iri mayo vigatatu.
You know, in this indigenous knowledge of Namibia, this book, this information that the information that are written here, are documented in here. They came from the elders, the people who knows and
indigenous what?
Indigenous knowledge of Namibia.
Okay.
And this book was yes. So you can go there because it was published by the University of Namibia.
Thank God.
In this book here, all kind of plants. They are there. From Katima, their names and all these things. In the Mangwe, this one, you find them in the. And this one, they were people, I believe the young ones, who went into research, who were commissioned to do this study. And then they spoke to the elderly people, who knows those plants. That's why I'm saying, if you really want to do fair, or do fairness, if you want to do justice to some of these issues,
yes.
So let's perhaps organize ourselves, and then if you say yes, this researcher, you cannot commission these people because of the funding. Because of whatever, then we now approach the funding agencies, those who have got the social responsibility and economy. The former president, Dr. Ndate Nangolo, said these agencies, this global agency, they have also the responsibility to assist in social and economic development of the country. And people were criticizing, why are you begging? So, of course, we have.
Tate.
We are begging because of some of these things were denied from us. They were deliberately taken out, and our knowledge were distorted and divided and all these things. But we are saying that there is we should also come up with this movement, like you are saying. This movement to mobilize and call for resources and go out there and document these things. If we identify that these people cannot write, like we say, they cannot write because they don't have no time. And some of these things in this language is difficult to us.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell me that you should, like these books, there are a lot of them here. Of course, I can give them, if the people ask me and this and this and that, I can put them together. I can give them some little hints. I will tell them that from before Corona started, every time the books are written. And I was only listening most of the time to Igor Evan. So now you see a lot of notebook. For me, I don't destroy anything. Only when it comes to this book.
Toshanga jemo wila kuchomba pira dhanshi.
Elizabeth. All my notebooks and papers, even the newspapers, they are Elizabeth's one. They will be like, if they are not important, people will not even fight me when I'm coming to pick up my newspapers that I inherited from Tate Buana. Nobody will come and fight me because all know the alesh. Kena kona shano mimbapila then. De tiga jimari wa anjene.
We know what. Let me.
Keshango mamboga njenga shangwa. When I was in Nigeria. Ngoro waita waruga man, ita waruga shashike timboto yorwa. Oh no man, change.
You know what? You know. So she mentioned that she thanked God for the Nigerian colleagues.
Yeah.
Because there are stories, in a form of a comics.
In Hollywood. A
form of comics. Mm-hmm. Hollywood, this movie that they all
listen. African movies.
But, you know, I don't know. For me, I do watch them when I used to read this comic of theirs.
Mm.
And your father used to like them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder he was so...
He was very much into the Nigerian. You know, we had like a box, ne?
Mm-hmm.
A box full of DVD players. Yeah, utoka. Eh? Even his last money.
I'm telling you.
I'm telling you, or DVD maybe 6. When this one breaks, he put up another one, my dear.
So now, for us, maybe we see which innovative way can we able to capture the mind of the elders, the young ones, and both, and then so that we start creating the ability to have some kind of interest. It is only you, because for you, you know.
There's a proverb that has circulated the world, and it makes sense that the lion will only be glorified when the lion learns how to write. But for now, the lion will only be glorified when it learns how to write. But for now, we will glorify the hunter, because the hunter is the one that shares the information. The lion cannot talk, Tate Buana. So the lion cannot say, kucha, me, I was at my last cycle, so I was very slow, and that is why the hunter came to catch me, because I was dying anyways. So now the hunter just looks like a warrior. He looks like a warrior, chasing a lion that is actually feeling very sick. He's not at his healthiest, but we will never know how the lion was feeling, because the lion can't write.
So, story novo, but Ranemo Shuambo.
Omkoshim!
My dear.
Thank you so much, Tate Buana.
Welcome, mommy.
Ciao, ciao.
I'm also grateful for affording me this opportunity.
Ne?
But you, oh.
Tate Buana, ne?
Oh!
Where are you? Like a patty. We are healing, my dear. We are all Congo Kashona, my dear. We are fike to yolo no kaferente kweko kolavio.
Turimo shirongo shetu.
Peshirila. Ah, we die for this country, man.
Bye bye. Good night.
Okay, bye, Tati Buena. Oh, ulala. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How are you guys doing? Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about your struggles. We're talking about your struggles and how life is going. But before that, ne? Hold that thought.
I was first introduced to the concept of academic research in the fourth year of my medical training, which was introduced as part of the mandatory modules at the university that I go to. I still recall this feeling of irritation and frustration at the prospect of having to undertake academic research before this university can allow me to graduate. I remember thinking to myself, how is academic research going to impact me? How is this action or this undertaking going to make me a better doctor? Well, it took me about 8 months of intensive formulation of research questions and undertaking research and undertaking data collection and before I could finally understand the importance, appreciate the importance of academic research, it taught me that I don't have to possess the IQ of Albert Einstein or Alexander Graham Bell for me to identify a problem in my community, conduct a series of investigations in an attempt to solve this problem. I could do it. Now, unfortunately, our society over time has developed this idea that groundbreaking research and world-class innovation can only be done by the US or Europe or Asia. Now, in our defense, this is what history has taught us. If we look at some of the top inventions that have revolutionized our world, inventions that have set the stage for more inventions to come, inventions like the telephone, the light bulb, or even the internet, these are inventions that originated from these parts of the world, from Asia, from the US, from Europe. And these are inventions that have contributed to the global innovation pool. Now, what about these inventions? The swimming pool cleaner, the CT scan, as well as the speed gun. These inventions have also revolutionized our way of life. These inventions have also contributed to the global pool of innovation. And if I were to ask you where these inventions came from, most of you would say from the US, from Europe, from Asia. But most of you would be wrong. These inventions, ladies and gentlemen, are a few of many that originated from the minds of South Africans. What a powerful notion that a developing country like South Africa was able to contribute to the global pool of innovation and revolutionize our world. Now, this begs the question, if a country like South Africa could do this, which is, by the way, one of our neighboring countries, to give those outside of Namibia some context. If a country like this that had the potential to invent, to innovate, why can't we? What secrets do they hold that we haven't mastered yet? The secret, ladies and gentlemen, is academic research, which we know is the foundation of knowledge that has bred innovation, technology, and development. Now, in my quest to find academic research works undertaken by Namibians, I looked at the national universities, and what I found was a wealth of academic research works. Research works that are not just interesting and innovative, but that have the potential to revolutionize our world beyond Namibia. Now, what I also found was that most of these research works, once presented, only stayed in academia. These research works weren't integrated into Namibian society or industries, which, in my opinion, defeats the whole purpose of conducting research if you can't use it to impact your community. Now, for research to truly be of value, there needs to be academic as well as non-academic impacts. The academic impacts obviously are well known. I want to shed light on the non-academic impacts. For example, impacts on healthcare, impacts on agriculture, the economy, and governance. These are just a few of many impacts that academic research could have. Now, why bother adopting or integrating Namibian research works into Namibian industries? Because, ladies and gentlemen, this paves the way to a more developed, a more self-sustainable, and a more industrialized Namibia. Which, correct me if I'm wrong, but is the whole premise behind the Millennium Development Goals and Vision 2030, which for the world beyond Namibia are terms that were coined by us to describe Namibia's socio-economic development targets. Now, Namibia has integrated a wealth of academic research works into its societies and industries. This fact I must acknowledge. The works that they've integrated are works from outside of Namibia. And one of the most well-documented examples of this is the research done on HIV transmission from mother to child. And because of this research, extensive research that was aimed at finding out the pathophysiology or the method behind the transmission of this virus from mother to child, Namibia was able to embark on a nationwide initiative called the Prevention of Mother to Child Transmission, or as we abbreviated PMTCT. And in just under a decade, was able to curb this transmission rate by over 50%. What a wonderful statistic. Now, as wonderful a statistic as this is, my problem is we adopt research works from other countries into our society, into our Namibian industries, to solve our Namibian problems. Why can't we adopt Namibian research works, which we can all agree is rife, into our Namibian industries and our Namibian society to solve our problems? Now, Bloomberg Rankings recently published a list where they looked at a number of countries' innovation quotient, as they term it, and they looked at a number of factors, one being research and development intensity, productivity, high-tech density, researcher concentration, manufacturing capability, education levels, as well as patent activity. And they published a list of top top 50 most innovative countries, of which I've listed the top five. As you can see, the United States tops this list. By the way, Bloomberg is headquartered in the United States. Surprise, surprise. Followed by South Korea, Germany, Finland, and Sweden. Interestingly enough, though, China ranked 29, while South Africa, which was the only African country to make it onto this list, behind Tunisia, that is, ranked 50th. So they made it just under the wire. So I asked myself, why is it that these countries made it on this list and we didn't? Or more importantly, why is it that our partner in the developing world, South Africa, made it on this list and we didn't? In an effort to try and answer that, I looked at the World Bank study on research and development expenditure. So to cut a long story short, the World Bank embarked on a mammoth research project whereby they looked at each country's GDP and which sectors contribute to their GDP. And one of the sectors was research and development expenditure. Now, to give you guys a bit of context, according to UNESCO's Scientific Advisory Board, investing 3.5% GDP towards science, technology, and innovation is a benchmark for successful, sustainable development. Now, as you can see, the countries that topped Bloomberg's list came very close to meeting this benchmark, if not superseding it. But look at Namibia. We are barely even visible on this pie chart. This is a fact or a statistic that we as a nation need to take stock of. From this data, one can certainly conclude that the countries with the most innovation are the countries that earmark more of their GDP towards research and development and expenditure. Research and development. Now, Namibia has a wealth of untapped natural resources just waiting to be exploited by young Namibian minds. One well-documented example is that of the Himba people, who have produced a number of perfumes, cosmetics, and even medicines from a wide host of plants and roots and barks and trees. And one of the roots or the plants that they used to extract these perfumes from caught the interest of one of the major cosmetic firms in Europe. They made their trip to Namibia to sample this root, or to sample this plant. They took it back to their world, and they ran a whole bunch of studies and tests. And the end product was a marketable new line of perfume that generated millions for this European company. Now, there's anecdotal evidence that exists that also seem to corroborate the medicinal products that the Himba people produce, yet there's no scientific research that can corroborate this. My question, ladies and gentlemen, why is it that we are waiting for developed countries to see our potential, to exploit our potential for their economic benefit? A possible research question I have is that of poverty in Namibia. Why is it that Namibia, with its very small population of 2.3 million people, has been battling with poverty 20 years post-independence? It's no secret that we have and continue to receive a wealth of financial aid from international humanitarian organizations, in addition to our own efforts, in order to curb this pandemic. Yet today, more than half of our people live below the poverty line. What is it that we are not doing? could it be worthwhile looking into the attitudes or the psyches of these so-called impoverished people to find out why it is they remain poor despite receiving aid through various means? And I'm sure most of you guys have taken part in blanket drives and food drives. Ladies and gentlemen, instead of seeking European solutions to African problems, it is time we found African solutions to African problems. My aim is to promote academic research, not just to satisfy some academic requirement, but to invoke young minds to think outside the box and to promote change or provoke change to outdated policies and mentalities, and hopefully solve Namibian problems so that one day when we are asked about the top inventions of our time, we can safely answer that some of these inventions were thought of by Namibians. Namibians like Michael Nenkavu, whose research identified a plant in Namibia that could potentially hold the cure for cancer. Or Namibians like Joanna Amunyela, who is among the first in the world to investigate the role that specific proteins have on the development of cancer. And ladies and gentlemen, this is the importance of academic research in our community. Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, welcome, welcome back to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Ladies and gentlemen, we are using a series of conversations that have been had by other people in order for us to hear the opinions of others. And we as Eagle FM, or as Eagle Media House, are under no circumstances claiming rights and ownership to any of the clips and any of the teachings. We are using it for academic purposes. We are using it to spread the word. So ladies and gentlemen, right, we are talking about researching Namibian things for Namibian people, because we like Inimayoko Mambo, right? We like other people's things. Now, the reason that I am giving us a series of these conversations, especially considering our topic is the struggles of men, right, is to encourage us to deal with our people, to encourage us to research, to write, to dive deeper into the psyche, to try our level best to understand. Now, if we, especially with the men, right, wouldn't it be amazing if there was some man out there that wrote a whole series or a whole book or a whole video or a whole welcome to my channel, right, where he just talked about a point in his life that was very dark, and he looked just like you, and he came from the place, same place you came from, and he could relate to the Namibian sun, and he could relate to the Namibian water, he could relate to the Namibian desert, he could relate to everything that is your reality. Wouldn't it be amazing? But many of us are hiding behind the shadows of, I'm not going to do it, I'm not going to say anything, I'm not going to contribute, I'm going to contribute in silence there where I am, so that I am not stigmatized against, or I am not saying anything at all because I don't want to participate. If we all have the mentality of, I'm not saying anything and I'm not going to do anything and I'm waiting for the next person to do that, then are we ever going to have a country that is filled with change? Are we ever going to have leaders in various areas? Or are we just going to have a gang of followers, but the problem is that there's no leader, so we're just following each other everywhere in circles? Is that what we're going to be having? Because I don't see us going to the forefront of anything to do with what we are going through right now, which is struggling men. Our men are struggling to the extent where they idolize, right? Idolize death and idolize the idea of death. And suicide is skyrocketing, right? Because there are different way, there are different reasons, right? As to why they do it. But all these reasons can be curbed. We can talk about it and we can fix it. We can fix the issues that men in this country are dealing with. But unfortunately, it can't be spearheaded by a woman. It can't be run by a woman. It can't be a woman at the forefront of boys must speak too. Boys must speak too. Because she will never be taken seriously because she's never been a man. And there are so many gender roles that come to play a part in the existence of a man in this country, so much so that it is almost impossible to breathe. Ladies and gentlemen, there are many struggles that men face, and there are many many issues that men are struggling with. And part of the issues that men are struggling with, we would say from previous conversations, is that getting accustomed to the new normal. It is very difficult for somebody, anybody, all of us, to get accustomed to something, to get accustomed to change, to get accustomed to the way the world is moving. But the way the world is moving is to be verbal, is to be vocal, is to understand oneself, it's to be self-aware, emotionally intelligent. It is to do all these things so that you find a balance within yourself. But it's difficult to find a balance within yourself when you feel that nobody can relate to you. And maybe by having this conversation and bringing up relatability, because all of our clips tonight resemble relatability. Can you relate to being an African? Can you relate to being an African youth? Can you relate to being an African, or not just an African, a Namibian, academic or non-academic? What are the struggles? We are saying it's unemployment. The question is, why are you unemployed? All right, we understand that unemployment is an issue, but why are you unemployed? No, I'm throwing in my CV all the time and my CV just never comes out. I never get shortlisted. I'm just never there. Are you doing your CV correctly? Those are questions. Because you feel that you have been throwing in CVs for the past 12 years, you know how to do it. But maybe you have been throwing in CVs wrong for the past 12 years. And you are still in the same position because you've not asked for assistance. You feel like there is some bad luck that is following you. Wakosherenge, wakosherenge, wakosherenge. And it seems as if nothing is working. Why is it not working? Because it is a matter of fixing that CV that you are pushing in. And then everything else falls into place. But because you've got pride and you've got ego and you don't ask anybody for assistance, you will never know. You will never know if you're actually doing anything wrong on that CV. And also, we had a CV conversation here on Pulling Heartstrings where one of our listeners identified that a lot of people, right, don't make it to anywhere when it comes to employment because their curriculum vitae is messed up. The way you fill in those forms is messed up. The way you do it is messed up. And also sometimes, right, I feel that we have this thing of listening to people that have never made it. We like listening to people that have never stepped out of their comfort zones a day in their lives. And that is the person that must give you advice about stepping out of the comfort zone. Do you think that if this person has no idea how to do their own lives, they know how to do yours? We listen to people that are pessimistic. We listen to people that are not for us. We listen to people that don't know. Now, this is also one of the questions, right? You are being told what to go study by a person that has never been to university. And I know when I'm not in the business of dissing parents. I'm not in the business of making parents feel bad just because they don't have a degree or they didn't get tertiary education. But truth is, your issues are kind of different. Your issues are not things that they could possibly relate to because they've never been there. But then now this is your mentor. This is the person that is telling you what to go and study. The same person that doesn't know where the gate of UNAM is. The same person that doesn't know the gate of Valvicha. Guys, the same person that doesn't know the gate of IUM is the person that's telling you what to go and study, and you are taking it fully. While you have an idea of what the market needs, but you're still going that route. Maybe, just maybe, if our boy child was not so influenced by external factors, he would study the thing that he would excel in instantly. Maybe there is a high dropout rate, not because of finances, not because of peer pressure, but maybe because the course that I'm doing, I'm not feeling. But because my parents said, my aunt said, my sister said, my girlfriend said. Now the person is out there studying what, and they have no idea how they feel through it. And you wonder why they can drop this thing without thinking twice about how many years and money and space and time and effort has been put into this already. They're not even thinking about that. They can drop out and go and sit kundingoshwara straight. They can go and sit. And it won't even bother them. Why? Why are they not bothered about being not formally educated when you were so close? There are people that are repeating. They are repeating grade 11. They are repeating grade 12. They are repeating. Some people have repeated grade 11 three times to make it to the position in which you are, that you are, that you can't have gratitude for because it's not something that you're grateful for, because it's not something that you want. What are the struggles? You guys are struggling. You guys are complaining about the women being gold diggers. You guys are complaining about the women being emotionally abusive, physically abusive. You guys are complaining about women not seeing your potential in your existence. But how can they see your potential when 52% of people are unemployed in this country? And we don't know the statistics yet, but I can guarantee that there are more men that are unemployed than women. I can, you guys can come and prove me wrong. I would love that, because then you brought us information, right? But this is what we are sitting with. We're sitting with a pandemic that is so silent, and it's even more silence now that the girl child is put as the poster child, is the child that is on every billboard. It's a shame. We're going through the motions.
Good evening, everyone. As you've been so kind as to introduce me, my name is Komla Dumont. I work for BBC News. Usually when I say that, people either get very upset or they become very excited. Working for the BBC is quite an experience, and I enjoy what I do. And we're here to talk about challenging conventional wisdom about Africa and the coverage of Africa, of course. But before we get into those issues, I want to give a shout out to my people who are here. Anyone from Nigeria here? All right. Fantastic. Arise, O compatriot. Shall we? Arise, O compatriot.
Nigeria's call obey to serve our fatherland with love and strength and faith. The labor of our heroes' path shall never be in vain. To serve with heart and mind, one nation bound in freedom, peace and unity. How about that? Now, I know there are other nationalities here. I'm a Ghanaian, by the way. But then again, judging from the immigration trends, I might as well, you know. And that applies to just the world. But I often get mistaken as a Nigerian. And look, I'm incredibly proud to be a Ghanaian. My grandfather composed Ghana's national anthem. But in 1957, when Nkrumah said to my grandfather, who was a music teacher at the time, that we need a new national anthem, my grandfather wrote Ghana's national anthem. However, my mother tells me, she's gone now, but mommy tells me that there was a day they were in a shop called Leventis. I don't think that still works anymore. Yeah. And grandpa was singing another song. And she asked him, Daddy, what's this song for? And he said, oh, I'm writing a song for Nigeria when they become independent. The point he was making is that these borders and these nationalities and these things that we hold so closely are slowly beginning to become less and less important. And if you're from South Africa, Tanzania, don't worry, I do the same thing everywhere else I go. No, but the truth is that it happens all the time. Everyone thinks I'm a Nigerian. I walk into, you know, T.M. Lewin and, you know. Yeah, we've now moved to Hackett. It's Hackett, yeah. It happens fairly frequently. I mean, I'll tell you the best I thought your Nigerian story was, I was at the Dorchester. A good friend of mine, wonderful woman called Eleni Gabremedin, works in Ethiopia, set up the commodities exchange there. Said, come over, there's an event here, I need an escort. And I said, yeah, no problem. And by the way, by escort, I mean the African version. I mean African escort, as in I was escorting her. So now you know. So I was escorting Eleni, who's a fantastic woman. And when I was there, I met another woman who I truly admire and I've always looked forward to interviewing. And that's the Nigerian finance minister, Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala. Amazing lady. So I walk up to Madame Ngozi and said, hello, Madame, I'm Komla from the BZ. And she looked at me and said, oh, Kola, how are you? And I said, I said, you know, excuse me, ma, but, you know, I'm from Ghana. She said, really? And you're so confident. That's a true story. I have a few friends who were there. And, you know, and you would think, for a minute, I wasn't too sure whether to feel insulted or, but she meant it in a good way. And it's so funny that, you know, a few weeks later, I was doing a sit-down with Baba, or General Obasanjo, as you know him. And I narrated this story, and then he paused and looked at me and said, uh-huh, what's your problem? So I take it from all sides, but, you know, I am a Ghanaian, very proud to be one. But because of what I do increasingly, it's become less and less important for me. Over the past 2.5 years, I think I've had possibly the best job at the BBC. I was hosting a program called Africa Business Report. Every week for 2.5 years, I would travel to a different African country doing exclusively stories about business, opportunity, entrepreneurs. As a result, I have a lot of air miles. But I also have, even as an African, a better understanding of the continent that I come from. I can travel to Windhoek, Swakopmund, Maputo, Luanda, and I have friends there, and I have a better understanding of the continent.
So how does that translate into how the BBC or international media cover Africa? Let's begin. Talking about Africa has become, I think, quite popular these days. Everyone's kind of coming to the party, even though some of the people at the party already knew the party was there and still kind of started, you know. But everyone's kind of like, yeah, you know, Africa's, you know. So there's The Economist sometime last year. There's Time Magazine this year with the same headline, you know. Quite original. But there comes a point in every professional's career or anyone who's dealing with Africa that they realize that it's not the same. And the story cannot be told in the same way. And this book, and there you can see me posing on the cover, written by a good friend of mine called Charles Robertson. And, you know, this really distills all the information about Africa and things. And it's a great cover as well, but it really contains a lot of detail about how Africa is changing. This is where it happened for me. 2009, that's a diamond worth several hundred thousand dollars. I was in Botswana. Empty building, not much going on there. It was called the Diamond Hub. Walked around, you know, Botswana is the biggest producer of gem diamonds. You know that. But the dilemma facing Botswana and many African countries is you produce these raw gem diamonds, make $4 or $5 billion a year from sales, but the diamond industry itself is $50-60 billion a year. So these raw diamonds get shipped to Antwerp and to Asia, and they get cut, and, you know, rich Nigerians go and buy the diamonds in somewhere in London or wherever it may be. So there's your diamond hub. This man is Dr. Akolong Tombale. He was the head of the diamond hub, and I went there to interview him, and this is what he told me. He said, "We are teaching our people how to cut diamonds. That's all we're doing right now. Teaching our people," and there they are, learning how to cut diamonds. And this was the beginning, just a few months old, the Diamond Hub. Fast forward to this year. Did anyone see the story in the Financial Times about De Beers and... Yeah, okay, well, I'll tell you, because it kind of slipped under the radar. De Beers has moved its trading operation to Habaroni. Did you know this? Well, it was on the BBC, so. So it brings me to another interesting point before we get to this. There's always that moment when you realize that, no, Africa, things are really going on. I have a great friend, his name is Sebastian. Sebastian works in South Africa for a multinational bank. And every time I'm going to South Africa, I call up Seb, and we were roommates in college. He chose a different path. So I call up Sebastian, and Sebastian says, "What time will you be in?" And I'll say, "Oh, you know, I'll be in at, you know, 9 o'clock, Virgin flight, blah, blah, blah." And I get there, and there's a brand new Mercedes waiting, and, you know, drive off to his place in some gated community in Sandton. And then Sebastian calls me and says, "Come on, I'm coming to London, oh." But yeah, bro. He arrives at the airport, and I say, "Take the Heathrow Express." And then the Bakerloo line, and, you know. But the best part is recently, sometime this year, and Seb is doing incredibly well, and Seb calls me up and says, "Kumla, Chale, trouble-o." I said, "What's the problem? What's the problem? I thought things were going great." He says, "Man, boy, they want to transfer me to London." And that's a true story. But increasingly, you're finding African professionals who really... They're building fantastic lives and opportunities on the continent. And what London used to be is not necessarily, it's not the same anymore. So Seb comes to visit and, you know, has a good time and he's off. And I think for many professionals here, you can relate that you are no longer limited to working in the city. You are now talented and capable enough to work anywhere in the world, including in Africa. And the reason why it's so important is because all of you have what I call institutional knowledge, or what my good friend and mentor, Lise Doucette, says, you've tasted the dust in the alleyway, so you know how to get around. And so it brings me to my point. In 2012 and beyond, whether you're international media or you're a business professional, how must things change in terms of how you cover the continent? And there's my point number one. There has to be balance, or what I say, please don't patronize me. Okay, where's that? I've given enough props to Nigeria. It's been just enough. Where do you think this is? Okay, I'll tell you. This is Luanda. Yeah, that's Luanda. That's Angola. That's Luanda as well. Mm-hmm. However, that's also Luanda. Less than 5 kilometers away from those posh yachts and all those expensive restaurants. This is Luanda too. So the question I put to you is, what story should you tell? Yes, there's a lot of good news about Africa, but there has to be balance. And all of you recognize when you're being patronized, when you're being told things are perfect when they are not. Everybody wants balance. So in this case, if I'm going to Luanda to talk about economic growth hitting 10% over 10 years and wealth, I have an obligation to tell this story as well. I'll tell you about this lady. I did an interview with her to ask her about, you know, Angola's economic growth and stuff. And she said, well, to give you this interview, you have to do something for me. And I was thinking, oh, I'm going to have to pay her or something. And, you know, we're not allowed to do that. But she came up with a better idea. You know, she spends 2 hours there fetching water. So she gave me a wheelbarrow as punishment. So I ended up, in exchange for the interview, I had to fetch water for a few hours. So, point number two, when in doubt, ask an Africa expert. This is one of my favorite ones. Who really is an Africa expert? How would you feel if you're watching me on telly one morning and, you know, good morning, my name is Komla Dumo, you're watching BBC News. Coming up this morning, we're going to have the latest from Syria, where the rebels are on the offensive, conflict in Egypt, etc., etc. And we are going to speak to an expert on haggis, that Scottish dish that everyone loves, and how it affects cholesterol. So we get to the haggis interview, and I said, yes, and so, you know, research has shown that haggis tastes great, but it may affect your blood pressure, etc., etc. Let's turn now to our haggis expert at University of Makerere. It does seem a bit odd, though. But would you have the same reaction if I said we're going to talk about an African story and we had an expert from Washington or from London? So, ask an expert. This guy is one of my favorite people. His name is Kasim Kaira. Nobody knows the Great Lakes like Kasim. Kasim, what is the impact of the M23 taking Goma? Kasim starts firing. Kasim, can the rebels move beyond towards Kinshasa? Kasim starts firing. Because he knows the place. He's from there. He understands. He speaks the languages. Kasim, what did, I'll make something up. Like, you know, what did Kagame have for breakfast? Okay, well, you know, let me call my contacts. You know, he can do that. But the fact of the matter is he knows it. And please, 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 respect your audience. By saying, well, you speak the native tongue, does not make you an expert. I have what I call the Suya test. I was telling Amina about it. If you say you're an expert on Nigeria, or an expert on Lagos, and I ask you, where do you buy Suya? And you tell me, Echo Hotel. Obalende Abi. Who's an Africa expert? If I want to talk about the impact of trawling, of fishing on the West African coast, this guy is the chief fisherman in Freetown, on the Freetown coast. He'll be in a better position to tell me about the impact of deep trawling or deep fishing on the coast. There's another. Is she? You know what I like about this lady? When she comes on air on BBC and you ask, you know, Rolake, you know, Rolake, do you think that, you know, the trouble in the Delta, will it impact oil? And then she'll start speaking phonetics and blah, blah. And after she's done, then we go out of the studio and she's like, oh boy, how now?